You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Eva Moskowitz, the founder and CEO of Success Academy Charter Schools, is no stranger to controversy. For some, at least in New York City, she's as polarizing a figure in the world of education reform as Betsy DeVos, and that is saying something. And although she is a lifelong Democrat, she was on the shortlist for President Trump's Secretary of Education. She writes about her advocacy for using charter schools to help disadvantaged children to succeed academically in a new memoir called The Education of Eva Moskowitz. It's published by HarperCollins. I'm very pleased it has brought her back to our show. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Aren't some congratulations in order? Success Academy Charter Schools is the winner of the 2017 $250,000 Broad Prize for public charter schools?
Yes, well, we're very proud of the teachers and principals, but I think the important thing to understand is that we have 46 schools. We're educating 15,000 kids. We're the seventh largest school district in the state of New York, and we were number one in student achievement as measured by the test scores, which admittedly are not everything, but do indicate a level of academic achievement.
Well, you were cited for closing achievement gaps, serving low-income students and students of color. So what will the money be used for?
Well, we have started something called an Education Institute to share all of our intellectual property. I've spent the last dozen years building rich content and curriculum, and we never are just about the children educated within our four walls. I started Success because I was interested in ensuring that all kids got access to a world-class education, and so that money is going to be used to help share with anyone interested our curriculum and content.
What do you think your critics get most wrong about you?
I think what they get most
wrong— Because this book does sound defensive at times. I'm sure that you feel embattled at times.
Well, for 12 years, people have been suing to shut us down, and many of the critics have never been inside the schools. And I think some of the criticism really comes from us being threatening to the system. People have a certain idea of what public education should be, is, and we're dealing in the real world. We've got real parents with five-year-olds who can't wait for a decade-long reform program. They need a great school for their kid right now. But in answer to your question, I think the thing that the critics have most gotten wrong is the level of love and nurturing in our schools. We know our kids really well. We know our families really, really well. There is a level of love and joy that the critics don't seem to see, even though it's right there in front of them.
Didn't you go to New York City public schools?
I did. I went through the New York City school system. I started in District 5, which was then and is still today, unfortunately, one of the poorest performing districts. And I ultimately
went. Where is
that? It's in Harlem. Mm-hmm. I ultimately went to Stuyvesant. My three kids have always been in the public school system, whether district or charter. So I'm the mother of three kids. And know the New York City school system very well. I was chairwoman of the education committee and did hundreds of hearings doing oversight on every conceivable topic: art, music, dance, science education, procurement. I even held hearings towards the end on toilet paper. Why couldn't we get toilet paper in the New York City school system? And I discovered that it was really hard to get this behemoth of a system, in which there are really good, dedicated people, to be truly responsive to kids and families, particularly our poorest citizens here in New York.
I went to a rather disadvantaged school in a rather disadvantaged area, Williamsburg. My siblings and friends, I think, would all say that they receive pretty good educations. Were things better in the past?
Well, I think in some ways they were, and we can point to a lot of factors. It was before social media, and the attention of students is diverted. If you remember, we had a highly segregated labor force, so women like me could not become doctors, lawyers, bankers, elected officials. You had highly, highly educated women who were teachers. You also had a broad middle class. Public education was really something that many, many partook of. Most New Yorkers, if they can escape a failing school, they do. They move to the suburbs. They send their kid to independent schools, parochial schools. And so what you have in New York City, unfortunately, is a deeply segregated system. We are spending here in New York $31 billion annually, and hundreds of thousands of kids can't read and count.
Your memories of Stuyvesant High School might surprise many parents who think of it as the crown jewel of public education. What was Stuyvesant like when you were there?
Well, in one sense, it was wonderful because the kids were so vibrant and intellectual. People would recommend books to me. I fell in love with Flannery O'Connor because a fellow student recommended it. I took AP Physics, and there was a Russian emigre there who knew physics in a way that I had never experienced. But you do have to understand that the teachers got there by seniority. They were happy to be in a safe school. I had a teacher who was not always sober. I had another teacher who read his newspaper. I had a French teacher who didn't know French. It was discouraging in that sense. I actually was there recently, and it's a whole different place now. And the vibe of Stuyvesant, I think it's returned more to the crown jewel, which is wonderful to see.
It was a crown jewel partly because you had to take a test to get in, and not everybody could get in, and its reputation was largely about mathematics and science. That wasn't the case when you were there?
No, I still remember taking the test to this day, hoping I would get in. My parents felt that there wasn't another choice, so if I didn't make it, it was going to have very significant consequences for my family. It's just that, you know, in the late 70s and early 80s, you had all these teacher work rules. It was very, very hard to run a high-performance schooling organization.
I'm speaking to Eva Moskowitz, who's the founder and CEO of Success Academy Charter Schools, former city council member for the Upper East Side. And she has written a memoir called The Education of Eva Moskowitz, which is published by HarperCollins. Does it bother you that so many New Yorkers, including the mayor, say they disagree with your mission? What was your dispute with Bill de Blasio all about?
Well, just to go back a second, I'm not sure how you can disagree with the mission, because the mission is to provide a world-class public education, free public education. We admit by random lottery, and we educate kids in art and music, science, inquiry-based science 5 days a week, chess. Unless you're going to be against chess or wooden blocks, I don't know how you can be against us. You know, there are certain public policies that you might be against. So I am a strong believer in something called co-location, and we're in a dispute now with the mayor. Most of the schools that are co-located are district schools rather than charters.
What does co-location mean?
Co-location is two different, or three or four, or sometimes five or six different schools housing the same building. And so about 20 years ago, when the small schools movement came about, they took these giant high schools and they broke them up into little schools, and then they co-located. So you were roommates with another school. I came along when I was on the city council and I said, you know, we have 200,000 empty seats in the city of New York. Why not allow charter schools, public charter schools that are publicly created, that are publicly regulated, that are publicly funded, why not let those schools open up in empty space, underutilized space? The mayor, who, you know, has been on the union team, and the unions historically have been against the public charter sector from the moment the law was passed in New York in 1998, have been against allowing schools to have space. As you may recall, in 2014, the mayor threw out One of our schools, Success Academy Harlem Central, which was the highest achieving middle school in math in fifth grade, we found ourselves educationally homeless.
We have listeners who also want to talk to you. And I'm going to put Maria from Manhattan on the line. Hi, Maria.
Hi, this is Maria. I'm with the Alliance for Equality Education. And just calling in because, you know, time and time again, we find ourselves pushing back against charter schools like Eva Moskowitz for many, many different reasons. But I think just speaking to, I mean, one of the things that you said is, you know, how some public schools don't have toilet paper, like just very basic things. And just thinking about how under-resourced our public schools, this is something that Eva Moskowitz never talks about, right? Like the lack of equity and fully funding public schools at basic levels for Black, Brown, and poor children across the state. And something that backers like Dan Loeb actually fight against. And so this is a huge problem that we're having. But just to Eva Moskowitz's point that she wants to service all kids, what we're actually seeing is that there is no real desire to service all kids. And this is reflected by the fact that they have lower numbers of English language learners, special needs students. The list goes on and on. And so we're seeing the cherry picking. We're seeing that they're not backfilling. We're seeing that they're not taking children with special needs. And this is a huge problem. And the last thing is really around the zero tolerance policies at Success Academy. We know of a child that's 6 years old and has been suspended over 20 times. And she loves to say, you know, children are problematic and they need to be suspended. And this isn't for all families, but the reality is that this is what the school to prison pipeline looks like and what they're enforcing and pushing at their schools.
You want to respond to Maria? She had a lot of gripes.
She did, and I'm very familiar with the AQE and their positions. But let me just try and very quickly, because I know there are a lot of listeners out there, on the issue of equity and funding, I have a long track record, including work on the CFE lawsuit to get resources for children. We are spending $31 billion, and I would suggest that about 90% of the schools are not working at a basic level. The 10% that are tend to be serving white, more affluent kids. So while I support greater funding, we also have to make sure that that funding is really serving children. And unfortunately, right now, it's not. In terms of serving all kids, there are a lot of myths trotted out by the opponents of public charter schools. We have the charter sector in general, but Success Academy in particular, has about 20% children with special needs. In the New York City school system, the system gets $1,600 per kid who is still an English language learner. And we tend to teach our children English, which means that they don't qualify as ELL. In terms of the discipline, I've been very vocal on my views. I do think that fairly young children can sometimes engage in highly dangerous behaviors. We had a child the other day who brought a 6-inch knife to school. So if you're dealing with not the ideal world, but the actual real world of what children are doing, I believe that we have an obligation to keep other children safe and also to keep our staff safe.
The New York Times ran a story that suggested some of the Success Academy schools draft a got-to-go list of students who are simply not making it at the schools. And then I guess the caller was referring to this past spring when a first grader at the Brooklyn Success Academy, a first grader, was given a 45-day suspension, which was overturned by an independent city education department hearing officer. What happened there?
Well, I can't speak to the particulars because there are all sorts of rules governing that. But I can tell you, first of all, that story that you're referring to is now several years old. And
the got-to-go list.
Yes. I mean, that was
a
mistake.
You got rid of that person.
No. That was a mistake that gentleman made. He did not understand that was inappropriate. And within 3 days before the media exposed it, he had been reprimanded, and it had been made clear to him that that was a profound error in judgment. And we're not perfect, Leonard. You have to understand, we're a startup. We're dealing with young educators who are working under incredibly difficult circumstances, who are making 100 decisions a day, trying to work backwards from what is in the interests of teaching and learning. And the inexperience of our educators does mean that, you know, mistakes are made. And
you're talking about creating a nurturing environment. This sounds antithetical to that.
Well, I don't think it is. That creating a nurturing environment does not mean that violent behavior. I don't know, Leonard, if you've been bitten at work by someone or had someone a 6-inch knife. Schools can be dangerous places to work, and we have to balance the rights and needs of the individual with the safety of the children and the staff. If, you know, a principal gets stabbed, and it's not as if it doesn't happen in the New York City school system. Yesterday there was a rape at a school. A month ago, not ours, a student was murdered inside a school. These are not imagined dangers.
That bullying story.
Yeah. I mean, it was months and months of a unsafe environment. And I don't think, we can allow teachers to be an unsafe environment. And as a parent myself, I worry about my 3 children. When I send them to a school, I expect the school to keep my kids safe.
I'm speaking with Eva Moskowitz, founder and CEO of Success Academy Charter Schools. Her latest book, her follow-up to the book she co-authored with Aaron Lavinia, Mission Possible.
Possible, yes.
About a guide to running charter schools. This one is a memoir called The Education of Eva Moskowitz, published by HarperCollins. We will continue our conversation after this. We are back with Eva Moskowitz, the founder and CEO of Success Academy Charter Schools. And we have a lot of people calling in, so maybe we want to take a few of these calls. I'm hoping that they're going to ask the questions that I was going to ask. Ellen from the Upper West Side, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I'm just wondering, when Success Academies have the ability to counsel difficult students out, and when they have certain entry points beyond which students are not allowed to enter the school for admissions, how is it fair to compare test scores in that environment to traditional public schools, or what actually I call public schools?
Well, we have actually very, very high student retention rates, much higher than our co-located schools or even the district in general. And so, you know, while no two schools are exactly alike, it is very, very clear that something very positive is going on at Success Academies, that kids are achieving at a very, very high level. And it's not just the test scores. You can look at how we're doing it in chess championships, or we have a world-class soccer program where we have 4,000 kids playing soccer. You can look at our debate teams and our math teams. You can see that incredible level of achievement across not only academic subjects, but non-academic subjects.
Thank you for your call. Why did you decide to become a vocal supporter of Donald Trump after the election, although you have since distanced yourself?
Well, I was never a vocal supporter of Donald Trump. I'm not sure where you got that. I voted for Hillary Clinton. I expressed that very, very publicly. The president-elect asked me to meet with him, and I thought, as a citizen and a leader, that when the president-elect calls one, one should meet with him. So I did that, but I declined to consider a position in his administration. And I am very troubled by what is going on in this country. And I said so very publicly a number of times, you know, what is going on in terms of tax reform. It's deeply troubling.
Former Education Secretary Arne Duncan has said that the policy proposals of the president and Betsy DeVos suggest that they feel private schools deserve money and public schools and vulnerable students don't.
Well, I support parent choice very, very strongly. I think that affluent people get to choose where they send their kids to school, and that poorer parents deserve the same set of choices. But that does not mean, you know, this is not a Republican or a Democratic issue. Education and reimagining public education, we have a crisis in this country. We are being outperformed internationally in every imaginable direction. We don't have a lot of time to fix a fairly broken system.
You say that school choice helps underprivileged children. Unlike Betsy DeVos, who sent her children to private schools, you sent your own children to Success Academy schools. Are there people of means who send their children to Success Academy schools?
Yes, there are. And by the way, I've sent my kids to both district public schools and charter schools. I have three kids, and they don't all need the same things. And that's part of the reason we want choice. But we have a number of schools in that are mixed income schools. So we've got a school on the Upper West Side where you have fairly affluent people going to school with poorer kids. In fact, our mixed income schools are among the most socioeconomically, racially, and ethnically diverse schools. And I'm very, very proud of that, because that's the whole meaning of public education, that everyone partakes. If only the poor go to public schools, then they're not really public schools.
Aren't your students chosen by lottery?
They are chosen by lottery.
Since you're serving mostly children of color, how does that work?
Well, if you open up in an area where there's diversity, meaning socioeconomic diversity, and you offer a really good school, I believe that you will integrate the school. And I think it's important, Leonard, to go back to this issue of the criticism, because many of the people who are criticizing public charters in general or Success Academy in particular are not saying what the alternative is. If you don't like Success Academy, by the way, no one's saying that you must go there. It's a school of choice. But I haven't seen, even though I've gone to hundreds and hundreds of schools, I haven't seen schools that are serving a super diverse or poor constituency that is getting the level of academic achievement that we are. And so it sounds like a criticism that's coming from a place where there, what is the alternative? And if someone, by the way, has a better idea of how we can educate our poorest, most vulnerable children super well, I hope they will invite me to come to their school, because I'd love to see that.
I'm speaking with Eva Moskowitz. She's written a memoir called The Education of Eva Moskowitz, published by HarperCollins. This is WMIC, WMIC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. You've expressed little patience with the way that the teachers' unions are structured. What changes would you like to see there?
Well, we have, for example, principal tenure in the New York City school system. So you get lifetime job security irrespective of performance. I don't think that that helps children. I also think we have a system where labor and management are on different teams. At Success Academy, that doesn't work. We have to have labor and management on the same team so that we can work backwards from the interests of children. And I think there are structural problems with the contract that don't allow us to really make decisions that are in the best interest of kids.
What, in your view, is the best way to evaluate a teacher's success?
You know, I wasn't a big fan of the teacher evaluation system. I think it was very, very clunky and challenging, even though I understood the desire behind it. It's complicated. We don't like these sort of very complicated systems, because often the best, most effective teacher, we will give them the most challenging students. So their outcomes may not be as high as the struggling teacher who we will give fewer challenging students to. So you kind of have to really understand what each teacher's strengths are and what they bring to the table and evaluate them in the context of the growth that their students are making.
Do you think that the current master's programs in education across the country are doing a good job to prepare teachers for the classroom?
I do not think they are doing as good a job as they could, and some of that is not their fault. I think they're getting students K to 12 who haven't gotten a solid education. We at Success Academy spend a lot of time teaching our teachers content. So if a teacher in our world, we do poetry starting in kindergarten. We read about a poem a day, kindergarten through eighth grade. And we really want our teachers to have read a lot of poetry and be able to understand at a deeper level how to interpret a poem. And often, teachers are not getting that kind of content training at schools of education.
Let's take some more calls. We go now to Mike from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm sorry for sounding a little bit echoey. My phone broke, so I'm calling through the computer.
Okay, sounds fine to us.
First point, I have so many points here. First point, starting with, she calls herself a public school, public accountability and whatnot. But when the state wanted to audit the school, the argument they gave was they were private, not public. So that's a contradiction. That's one.
Well, okay, let's stop. Because the listeners will have a problem trying to write them all down.
Okay.
Eva?
Sure. So at one point, the state comptroller wanted to audit us. We have our internal auditors. The Charter School Institute audits us. We get audited three or four different ways. And when the state comptroller wanted to audit us, even after a lawsuit had been won that said he didn't have that authority, we objected. But the comptroller recently audited us, and we have been found to have strong financial health and strong financial control systems.
Okay.
I'm not arguing that. The argument you gave was that you were a private school. That was the argument you gave.
And no, you're saying that's not correct.
That's the argument that was reported in the papers. But anyway, aside from that, you talked about how the academic achievement, your school is a testing factory. That's what it is. Very few, if any, of your students made it into Stuyvesant. So Stuyvesant, the school you went.
I appreciate that perspective, but I take it you've never been to one of our schools. We are not. That is the common critique, which has been made over and over again, that we are a test prep factory. Why would we teach chess? Why would we spend 90 minutes every Wednesday on games? We do Blockus, Batgammon, Monopoly, Settlers of Catan every Wednesday. We have a block room that is dedicated to play in K. We have debate teams and math teams. We do inquiry-based science. Our dance program is phenomenal. We have an incredible visual arts program. I was just at one of our schools in our ceramic studio. We spend about 40-45% of our day on non-academic subjects. So it's just empirically wrong.
Let's take another call. Shakina from the Bronx. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, hi. How are you?
We are well. What do you want to talk about?
Well, I wanted to ask, why is it that they consider using EMS and 911 on children with disabilities? I don't understand why is that the measure that's taken with children that is considered to have a disability.
You have a child at a Success Academy school?
Yes, I do.
I'd have to know more about the circumstances, but EMS is the Emergency Medical Service, and the number that you use for the police and the EMS is the same. And so let me finish. I let you finish. We find often that children are in psychiatric crisis. And so we have been instructed that it's important to call EMS when kids are a danger to themselves or others, and we follow that protocol.
Well, you say that a lot of the critics are not within the school system that attend your schools and things of that nature, but this children that are suffering inside of your school system, and you state that these critics are, there's a lot of people, there's a lot of parents that don't want to speak out in fear of retaliation. And another thing is that you consider it a public school, but you use a lottery to get these children in the school. So how is that a public school?
Well, the lottery is required by state law, and it is considered the fairest way to admit students.
We have time to sneak one more call in here. Lisa from, it says North America. So, hi, Lisa.
Hi, I am from North America, but I'm also from Hastings-on-Hudson, New York.
Okay, go ahead.
So my question is, I know when the state authorizes a charter school, they give you target enrollments for at-risk children, and they use three categories, economically disadvantaged, English language learners, and students with disabilities. And you are required to meet those goals or at least make a good attempt and come close. But in the in the SUNY Charter Schools Institute report, looking at all of your schools at your Success Academy NYC organization, it looks, from what they've reported, that literally not one of your schools has met its target in all three areas, and that many of them are substantially below. So just to give you an example, Success Academy Rosedale, and that's the one I know you've been advocating to have more space in, it's been in the news, the state gave you an enrollment target of 10% for English language learners, yet you're only at 3%. Same school, you are given a target number for students with disabilities of 13%, yet you only have 7.6%. Economically disadvantaged children, 84%, yet you're only at 67%. And I can do this with just about every school you have listed. But here's my question. One, you're not meeting the targets, but two, we hear you claim often how you need more schools because you have such long wait lists. So my question is, I guess it's two-part. Why haven't you met the targets, and especially why haven't you met them in light of the wait lists that you talk about so frequently?
So I think it's important to understand that when you're a random lottery school, while you can do outreach, you can't make families apply or attend. So we do very, very broad outreach, which, by the way, the opponents to charter schools are constantly criticizing us for. But we do incredibly broad outreach, so nobody doesn't know about the option. But then we get who we get, and we educate those kids. On the special ed, we have very high percentages. It's about 20% on average at the elementary schools, slightly higher at the middle schools. In terms of English language learners, you do need to understand that if you pass the English test, you are no longer designated as an English language learner. So there are lots of ways I could get into the weeds and explain those various results. But you do need to understand that we have seven elementary schools who are graduating kids from fourth grade, and they don't have a home to go to for middle school, even though their families want to stay within the Success Academy school.
Success Academy schools have kept their doors open to undocumented immigrants. Have you had to take extra steps for that community to keep them safe? Have ICE agents turned up at any of your schools?
The agents haven't, but we do have a legal team working to protect kids and families.
Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you, Leonard.
Eva Moskowitz, her memoir, The Education of Eva Moskowitz, is published by HarperCollins.